Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hi, everyone. I'm Cole Kuiper here with Giants insider Alex Pavlovich, and we're part of Giants Talk right here on the NBC Sports Podcast Network. Giants Talk comes to you every Monday and Thursday and is brought to you by Wendy's. Get yourself a $1.99 honey butter chicken biscuit today. That's just not a sponsor read. That is a personal recommendation on behalf of Cole Kuiper.
Same? Yes. Double recommendation.
Enough said. These are two guys that like their food, so that comes from the heart. Giants are coming right out of San Diego, lost the series, two wins for the Padres, one for the Giants, and yet, why do I feel so strangely optimistic about this series, Alex?
Yeah, I felt this even before today's game. I felt it's not a win, but I was like, I feel better about them. And people who have been listening to us know that I've been kind of like, let me see somebody that's not the Mariners. Let me see somebody that's not the Rockies. And I really felt that way mostly about the starting pitching and wanted to see how they would do. And I thought Logan Webb did a nice job on Friday, made one mistake. DeScofani did a nice job on Saturday. Again, made one mistake. It cost those guys five combined runs on two pitches. But I thought both of them pitched really well, and both of them went six innings. And then Gausman goes out there Sunday, six innings, one run. I don't even think he made a mistake. He just got hit on a pitch out of the zone by a super freak. So that to me is like, look, they left the bases loaded a million times. They lost Tommy La Stella. There's other issues here. Brandon Belt, I think, struck out like, I don't even know how many times over the weekend. So there were some issues. And offensively, there are some issues. But I was really curious if the pitching staff that we saw in April could do that against a better opponent. Because if that's the case, then these guys can hang around throughout the summer if they're healthy. And if that rotation is healthy and they're going to get Johnny Cueto back in the mix too, they can hang around. And I think they did it for 3 days.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that we're having this level of success right now with the pitching staff in a Johnny Cueto-less rotation. It's almost like pinch myself, I'm dreaming. Without that little three-run issue in game two with Doval, I mean, we lost two really close winnable games and then more or less blew them out in the third, which is way better than anyone would have expected us to do against the Padres at the beginning of the season. So I was watching today's game, mentally rooting for a win just so I didn't have to go on this podcast and try to explain to everyone how getting swept was a good thing. Even going into this game, I was very happy about how they had played. So
if they had lost 2-1 today, I'd say the same thing, honestly. Like yeah. if Gausman did what he did and they give up a 2-run homer in the eighth and lose 2-1, I still would have felt okay about it. Like, I just think that's, you know, in this division, we talked about this before the year, the Dodgers and the Padres, the rotations are so good. And we saw a lot of that this weekend. And that was my thing going into the season. I was like, I don't see how the Giants can compete with that from a pitching standpoint, but maybe they can. And we'll see what happens. And Gabe Kapler said it repeatedly this weekend. He's like, it's early. It's been a month. It's May 2nd, whatever, May 3rd. Just every single day seem to have the same thing. But if they're going to pitch like this, they're going to hang around.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Dodgers pitching staff doing so well, and I want to give the Giants staff some extra credit here because the Dodgers staff got just brutalized by Tatis Jr. when they faced him pretty much all year long. They've been just getting beat around by this kid. And the Giants had, I mean, as much ownage as you can say when you give up a home run, but ownage on him.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to see his mindset because it seemed like he was just like 100% fired up for that Dodgers series, and just in every respect, and knew that was like the national headline series and went all out and was on every show the next day. On Monday, he was on MLB Network, he was on SportsCenter, and then he was really quiet for the last 3 days. And I wonder if this is, you know, when teams go in and they face the Warriors and, you know, they're all psyched to face Steph, and then this is not a knock on the Giants, but then they go up the road and face the Kings or something, you know, like maybe it's a different level of excitement for certain guys. Like he just kind of wasn't the same dude this weekend. And I give a lot of credit to Giants pitching, and Logan Webb got him right off the bat on Friday night. But it would be, I would just be curious to see, like, the Giants go back there in September, and if the Giants are still hanging around in the race, I'd be curious to see if he had more of a stranglehold on the series, because he always seems to step up in those big spots in Dodgers series. but hasn't done it against the Giants so far.
Last week's pod, you and I made guesses on how many home runs he was going to hit this series, and we both landed on one home run, but there was kind of the unspoken possibility that it was one to maybe nine. We'll see. And it was one. There we go. We hit that right on the head.
Yeah, and it was a weird thing because the one he hit was on a good pitch from Kevin Gausman, and he just crushed it right down the right field line. And he, like, changed his swing so he doesn't have a one-handed follow-through anymore. So he has this two-handed follow-through that worked. And it was just a weird series for me to watch from him because I watched that today, and I'm like, you've been awfully quiet for a guy who can then do that to Kevin Gausman. So, yeah, I was just curious. I wonder if I think the Giants certainly will see a better version of him at some point. But I don't know that we've seen, like, the version that the Dodgers saw. We haven't seen that of him, I don't think, in person.
No. And I think we're lucky as fans of the Giants to have not seen that, but we're probably unlucky as fans of baseball to have seen that because he's a hell of an exciting player to watch. I want to give another shout out to a guy we gave major props to last time around, and that was Mike Tauchman, the Sock Man. He's looking great out there. He's fitting in like a glove.
I know. I was a little worried. I was actually thinking after Saturday's game, I was like, man, we really talked a lot about him on Wednesday night. And I was at the ballpark, and it was after his first game, and it was great. And then he was a little bit quiet for a couple days. And then goes out there and pulls that homer down the line, his first one since 2019. So I looked this up today. I looked up Brett Gardner's numbers because they traded him because they're basically the same dude. And I'll look it up again just to say it because it's really interesting, and it's something that I don't know that I can imagine the Giants doing this. Maybe they would, but, I mean, Gardner is 37 years old. He is a very similar player and was okay last year. But they brought him back, and right now he's hitting 188, 291 on base percentage, two extra base hits, just two doubles. So him and Tauchman basically were having the same start to the season, and the Yankees gave up on the younger guy, and sent him over to the Giants for, no offense to Wandy Peralta, but just not very much. And I feel it'll be an interesting thing to follow over the rest of the season to see where Gardner ends up and where Tauchman ends up. Cause I feel like that's going to be one where Yankees fans are going to look up in like 3 months and be like, man, we really got rid of the wrong left-handed hitting outfielder.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys. I gotta ask you this because you're in a position where you're able to interact with the players a lot more during regular non-COVID situations. Him and who else? Who are some guys you wish you were more able to speak face-to-face to and really get to know? Because he seems like a fun dude. And I know there's a lot of young and new players on the team who you and my dad and different media members haven't been able to get that relationship with that they would in normal situations.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, so we know some of these guys from a little bit, like I've interviewed spring Kevin training. Gausman one-on-one in spring training before the world shut down. So, but not much. The two newcomers who stand out right off the top of my head when you say that are Kurt Casale, because I think, and we've seen some funny interview moments from him already, and he just strikes me as like Nick Hunley, Stephen Vogt, Kurt Casale. Like, and those guys are such go-to guys for the media, and just fun guys to talk to in the dugout during batting practice. And I loved covering both of those two previous guys. So Kurt, I have a feeling is similar if we would be in the clubhouse and in the dugout. And then the other guys, I think Alex Wood is really interesting. And gives really interesting answers and smart answers and funny answers sometimes. And I thought it was hilarious when he tried to steal third. So I would have liked to have been in the clubhouse afterwards instead of on Zoom. Cause I feel like that was one of those moments where, look, it wasn't funny to the Giants. It wasn't funny to Gabe Kapler, but one of those where maybe he would have been able to laugh about it a little bit more in a clubhouse with reporters than on a Zoom call with, 15 people that's being recorded. And so, yeah, that's a good question. Those are two guys who stood out.
Another one of the guys I wish I was able to get to know a little better, Tommy La Stella. A scary moment for La Stella today. Dove for a ground ball. Did he tweak his thumb? Did he roll his thumb over? I couldn't quite tell on the replay where he got hurt, but he was out there not feeling great.
Yeah, he was. Your dad was all over that. He was like, I've done that before, and right away he rolled over the thumb, and just right away looked like he was in pain. And Dave Greschner comes out, and you think he's coming out of the game, and then he stays in, and then he hits a triple, and he does come out of the game after scoring. So, left hamstring strain, according to Gabe Kapler, and I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast because I'm not sure if we did it right after Solano got hurt, but. I did say this on the post game show that day, like when somebody is going to be out for a couple of days, it's a much different reaction from Gabe Kapler than when somebody's going to be out for a couple of weeks. And maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but he doesn't like to give up information if he doesn't have to give up information. And he did admit that they could be without Tommy for a little bit. And it's kind of what he said with Solano too. I just got kind of the same vibe, and hopefully it's not as bad because I think Solano, we're still weeks away from having him back. And so I think it's going to be an IL situation for sure with the hamstring, and we'll see what the MRI says. But it was one of those that, you know, and you and I have watched a lot of baseball over the years, when you see somebody pull up with the hamstring and then limp off the field, like usually you don't wake up the next morning and feel like I'll be good in 48 hours. Like that's measured in weeks.
Yeah. Whenever guys have an injury like that, my first concern is it's something they've dealt with earlier in their career, and recurring hamstring injuries. That's a gnarly concept. So I went back on his Wikipedia because I remember he was battling a leg injury back with the Angels, and turns out that was a broken leg. So we're good there.
It's totally different. By the way, can I interrupt?
Totally different.
If people want to pause the podcast and go to YouTube and look up when Santiago Casilla, not ruptured, but basically ruptured his hamstring running to first at Coors Field. Do you remember that? And your dad and Mike had like the most disgusted reaction on the broadcast because he just busted it to first when he shouldn't have been and got hurt, and they were both like shocked and just couldn't believe that he had done that. And that was Bruce Bochy was the same way. He could not believe that one of his top relief pitchers got hurt trying to, you know, go 20 miles per hour down to first base. But it's very funny. It's not a funny quip because he got hurt, but it's an interesting quip to go back and listen to the call. Cause I think everybody was just like, what just happened?
I am kind of embarrassed at how pro DH this podcast is becoming, Alex.
Yeah, we'll see where I end up. I did enjoy watching, you know, there's interesting moments like Kevin Gossman's bunt that gets bobbled. And those are the types of things. Like, I don't know. It's different. And DeSclafani had a hit. Gossman had his first hit. So we'll see where I end up on this because I'm kind of leaning back now towards like I don't hate watching it if every once in a while they're going to put the ball in play and exactly. At least give us something to like that's different than another hitter. So
I don't even need hits. Loud contact is fine with me. Give me that, shot to center field. Boom.
I'll just say contact.
Contact. There you go. Foul a few off and we'll call it a win for the pitchers. One more topic I wanted to talk about from the Padres series before we move on to general Giants topics of what's going around the league. Was the end of the game the other night where Flores got laid out to dry by the ump. I wanted to hear your take on that because coming from a fan perspective, I was furious. But do you think he should have been adjusting to the new strike zone? Do you think he thought that was a mistake and didn't think it would happen again? Do you think those were punishment strikes for him complaining? What do you think really went on there?
So I don't think there were punishment strikes because I thought the umpire was, and it was Adam Hamari, I thought he was consistent a little bit with having kind of a weird zone. Like it wasn't like that was the first time that those pitches had been called that night on those three. And he was giving people that pitch. So this is a tough one because, and I've asked Gabe Kapler this before, actually, like they're trying to have everybody who has a great idea of the strike zone, and Brandon Belt to them is like the ideal a little bit because he knows exactly what is the ball and what is a strike. And he's going to their method. And they're even going down to the minor leagues. It's like, be able to identify strikes and then be able to identify strikes that you can drive. And if it's a pitch you can't drive, don't swing at it. So those are pitches that Wilmer Flores, if he swings at, he best case, he hits it to second base. Like, so it's tough, but at the same time, like sometimes that's just the way it is. And I don't know that you can just go down looking in that situation. And it's like trying to get guys out of this. They spend all day, every day, all spring trying to make the right swing decisions. And sometimes you just have an umpire with a different zone. So I know that happened a couple of times last year, and I asked about it, and they're like, well, you know, we're not going to get on Bell's case for not expanding. But that's always been the thing with Bell, right? Like people are like, hey, the umpire's giving him that pitch. Like you can't take it, because you might say it's not a strike, but he says it's a strike, and he's ultimately the one who makes that decision. So I felt that a little bit. But the other thing I felt was that I think the umpiring has been really bad this year. And you know, we saw the only person at Petco Park who thought Darren Ruff's grand slam was a grand slam was the umpire. Like even Darren Ruff kind of reluctantly ran the bases, and he was like, well, that wasn't, there were maybe three calls overturned in the series. It felt like, I don't know if you saw the play in the Phillies game where McCutchen got called out for running out of the baseline when he didn't, but that was like, they missed two calls on that. They missed McCutchen, and then they missed the back end. They did throw the guy out at first, and they called him safe on the field. So I kind of just, and at this point, I'm like, somebody needs to take accountability for it. And so in a wider pick, like in that moment, I kind of was like, you know, Flores, that's just a strike zone tonight. But in general, I think the umpiring has been bad, and somebody needs to do something about it, because it's a real problem. And we're seeing it almost on a nightly basis. We're seeing bad calls.
Are you part at all of the robot ump movement? Like, do you want to see a C-3PO back there? Or is that just me and the other fans who just kind of think with their heart and don't actually put thought into what that means for the game?
I don't, because I do think it's interesting that there are like slightly different zones. And I think it's interesting that calls can be, you know, Austin Slater walked in a pretty big spot. The Giants didn't end up scoring, but that was right at the bottom, like 95 miles per hour, right at the bottom, that could have gone either way. So I think that's interesting. And I like that being part of the game, but I also, I just wish they would do a better job of making sure that, you know, the four guys on the field every night deserve to be on the field. And there are guys that we could talk about, Joe West and Angel Hernandez, and guys who have been screwing up for years and are still out there. So I don't know. Hamari's a young guy. I generally haven't thought he's been bad in the times I've seen him, notably bad, I guess. So he was the other night, but I just wish I would do a better job of making sure that all these guys are super qualified, because you could go, look, there's guys in the minor leagues, there's guys in college, like there's a million people out there who are trying to be big league umpires, and it's really hard to get to that point. And I think some of the people who get to this point don't do a very good job, but then they're around for 30 years.
Yeah.
So all that's right. I don't know that I'd replace them with umpires. I think I'd replace them with better umpires, or with robots. I'd replace them with better umpires.
Alex, we're all going to get replaced by robots. That's just the first domino of many. This podcast is going to be two robots talking into a computer in 10 years' time.
Well, it's less work for us, so.
That's true. That's true. They'll probably be better than us, anyways. Speaking of people who feel like they're going to be around forever and stand behind home plate, Buster Posey. He's just been showing off. It's been so great to have him back. And you posed this question earlier this week to me. With him hitting this way, are we going to see him playing more games and maybe playing first base instead of taking some off days?
I feel like it's not totally going that direction, but the conversation has been opened up from absolutely not to it's something I'm thinking about from Gabe Kapler to like, we're worried about his health, but we're now thinking like seriously about it and thinking about the repercussions. And I'll just put this in here. We'll put the audio from Gabe in here talking about why they're not doing it, first of all, and why Buster basically has just caught, you know, the first two games of every series and then has sat out.
The most important thing that I think we're thinking about right now is how do we get Buster Posey to continue to have his body recover and move the way it's moving. So while it's very, very tempting to get him into the lineup as potentially a first baseman on a day game after a night game, it's more important to ensure that he gets adequate recovery. because this performance is ideal. And I just want to be very cognizant of not messing with that performance. I'd rather have it 2 out of every 3 days than impact the performance negatively by running them out there 5 or 6 days a week.
Dish and Sling customers, don't miss a game this season on NBC Sports Bay Area and NBC Sports California. Don't miss your A's, your Giants, your Kings, your Sharks, your Warriors. To keep watching your favorite teams, go to howtowatchnbcsports.com.
So there's Gabe given the explanation, and it makes a ton of sense. I'll just say, as somebody who has asked this question or seen it been asked going back to last season and then this spring a couple times and a couple times this season already, like, the goalposts are shifting a little bit towards,
yeah.
It used to be like, absolutely not. Now it wouldn't surprise me if in a few weeks, you know, all of a sudden, and we're not out there all the time, people aren't on the road, so they'll probably do this on the road, but in a few weeks somebody spots them taking ground balls at first, just to make it an option, because if he's going to hit like this and the rest of the team's not going to hit, it's really tough to have his bat out of the lineup. So I think there would be times where, you know, maybe Wednesday at Coors Field is an example of this. Like, you have a 3-game series in Denver, a place where Buster hits very well, a place where you want good bats in the lineup, and you're off on Thursday. So maybe there are times down the line where you look at it and go, catch the first 2 games, sit, you know, play first base in the 3rd game, and then you get a full day off. But it's shifting. The conversation is changing a little bit on that.
That's good to hear, because I remember, you know, what, 5 years ago, that was the main discussion around Giants fans. You know, what happens when we move Posey to first? Not
or
if,
third,
but when we move Posey to first.
Yeah. Or can he play third base because he was a shortstop in college? So that was like a big part
I'm still holding on to trying to get him to play all 9 positions in 1 game like Will Ferrell. I think he can do it, and he needs to do it before he retires.
You know, Pablo was going to do that 1 year, and then something happened. I'll look this up before the next podcast, remind me, but something happened that kept Pablo from doing that. But I think Bruce Bochy was going to allow him to do that.
That would have been so awesome. I mean, he's already just a lights-out pitcher, so what else do you really need? And he's a catcher. He's a great, great guy to make that happen.
He can but catch, you so you're up, like a, you're 90% of the way there if he can catch. So
exactly. Yeah. You brought up Buster at Coors Field. I want to jump ahead just a little bit because the Giants bats have been struggling, with the exception of a select few. Obviously, Coors is a opportunity to break out of a slump, so to speak. Get some pop into your bat that you're not experiencing other places. Which hitters do you think are going to benefit the most from a few days at low altitude and with what Timmy Lincecum called the juice ball expletive?
Yeah, I think I mentioned him earlier a little bit, but every once in a while, Brandon Belt goes somewhere and finds his swing and gets hot in like a hitter's park and then carries that for like 2 weeks. And I think this is, I'm calling my shot. I think this is where he does that this time. He's done pretty well there in the past. He hit one like 480 feet there a few years ago. He just had a really, really rough weekend and struck out a ton and left a lot of guys on base. So he, I think, needs to see the environment there in Denver and see that ball flying batting practice, see that ball flying games a little bit and get his swing going. And they need somebody to do it. So that's the guy I'm looking at is get healthy over the next 3 days, find your swing and carry that over into the homestand. Cause Padres are coming right back in. So, and you're putting a ton of pressure on your pitching staff if you keep hitting the way you did for the last 3 days.
I think that's a great answer, but I do feel like every once in a while, we got to be careful when we talk about Belt, because we're going to reignite the Belt Wars over here. And I don't want to be the Franz Ferdinand of Belt Wars 2.0.
Well, I've started telling people this on Twitter. I've opted out of the second decade of the Belt Wars.
Hey, so
people argue my mentions, I just politely tell them that I've opted out. We've been doing this for over a decade. I did a decade of it. I'm not doing the second decade of the Belt Wars. So just pull, you know, kindly untag me and you guys can continue arguing.
Yeah, you need a surrogate. Get like Carey Crowley to be your tag in for those kind of conversations.
Nobody deserves to be part of the Belt Wars anymore. It's been going on too long. So if people want to do that, that's fine, but just do it like in another part of the internet.
Before we move on to talk a little bit about the minor leagues and what's going on around the NLS, I wanted to ask you, I heard an update that Yaz could be back for next Padres series. So that would be skipping the Colorado series and then back at home on Friday. What do you think? Are we going to see Yaz on Friday? And, you know, he's one of the guys I would have said needs some time in Coors to get his pop back. Obviously, it didn't happen. The timing didn't work out. But I'm looking forward to seeing him back in the lineup.
Yeah, he was famously, you know, his first year, they basically set him down in Milwaukee. And then Dickerson had, like, back spasms, a bunch of things happened. He stayed on the roster, goes to Coors Field. They play four games there. He hit, like, I don't know, 900 with like eight home runs. He did something ridiculous there and has never gone down since and became Yaz. So he would have loved to be there, but I don't think Denver, and this is one thing to watch. Denver's a really bad place in terms of like hydration and muscle strains and things like that. And this is a team that we seem to every single game see a soft tissue injury. So I think anybody who's hurting at all, they don't want out there on the field. He wasn't going to be eligible anyway, but yeah, that's something to watch this week. But he should be back hopefully on Friday. And then Johnny Cueto sounds like he's doing well. Is going to be a few days behind him. So they've lost some guys. They might lose more because it seems to happen every other day. But a couple guys on the way back.
I was worried there for a second when you said Denver's a bad place, .. because we were bashing Philly a few weeks ago on the podcast and my DMs were lighting up with people who were unhappy about that one.
Yeah. I actually like Denver as a road city. So I won't ever
say all it. All those Coloradans who had their pitchforks ready are putting them down now because this is a pro Denver pod.
Do you know what Denver has more of than anything? I mean, Denver has a lot of certain things.
I was going to answer one thing, but I don't think it's what you were going to say.
No, I'm going to be careful. They have more of those like chopped salad places than any city I've ever seen where you...
Like Fresh Choice?
No, although I do love Fresh Choice. But like you know the ones where you walk in and there's just a bunch of ingredients and it's like you choose what kind of lettuce you want, you choose what vegetables you want to go on there, you choose which protein and all these other things. I put some ranch on there, whatever, make it not the healthiest, but... Denver has the most like little salad places I've ever seen of anywhere. And we do a lot of San Diego, Denver series. So you go to San Diego, you go crazy. And then you go to Denver.
Fried food.
Yeah. You go to Denver, you eat some salads, you run a little bit in the elevation, you feel your lungs burn and you feel much better about yourself by the end of the trip.
That's the perfect road trip. Boom.
Yeah.
And just to think we could have been on that road trip.
I know.
This year.
A different one.
Different life. Let's move on, talk a little bit about minor leagues. Big news, the minor leagues rosters are released. And who do you think, you put this question in the rundown, I think this is a fabulous question. Who do you think was a better San Jose roster, 2009 or 2021 this year? And we can break down the 2009 roster. It is strong, especially with the guys off the top that everyone listening to this podcast knows well. Buster Posey, Bumgarner, Crawford, and the beardless Oakland A, Sergio Romo.
Yeah, so it sounds ridiculous on the surface because that 2009 team was, you know, one the best affiliate team they've ever had, the team that they put together. I mean, guys always look back at it. And, you know, I've talked to Crawford about this and Posey about this. Like, they look back at that team and they're like, it was a lot of fun and we've learned how to win a little bit there. And I think Crawford was there a lot longer than Posey, but a lot of guys came through that team, and including – Angel Villalona, who was, you know, had a sad end to his Giants career, but was a very good prospect at the time. So it's a really good group, and it looks much better when you look back on it, obviously. Like, there's Giants, forever Giants, like, are littered on that roster. And then just other guys who made the big leagues, like Nick Noonan and Roger Kieschnick. I think Gillespie was on that team. But the really interesting thing about the 2021 team is that I think it's more depth overall in terms of good prospects. And it's also a much younger group. So it's not like a bunch of guys who had just been in college, and Bumgarner wasn't, obviously, but some of these other guys were college draft picks. And so this is a quick stop for them. It's a little bit different this time. You have Luciano, you have Kyle Harrison, Luis Matos, who's somebody I'll be talking about all summer and watching all summer. I just think he's going to be a big time prospect for him. They're all 19 years old, and you have Canario there. You have basically all of last year's draft for the most part. Like, those guys are all there. Swinney, Glowenki, I'm never going to be able to say his name, but you know, Schmidt's there. So it's just a really interesting group, a really deep group. And they're all so young that I'm just fascinated by, like, I think in terms of like upside and how many guys you could look at and say, like, that guy might never make the big leagues, but that guy could also be like a six-time All-Star. I think there's more of that here than there was in 2009.
That's what I like to hear. I'm a person who wishes he followed minor league baseball more than he did. So I rely on your columns to kind of keep me abreast on what's going on, but it is on my 2021 summer list to go to a San Jose game. I don't know if you would like to attend that game too, but I would love to see these guys in person, because I've always kind of wished I got a glimpse of that 2009 team before they were Madison Bumgarner, before they were Buster Posey, you know?
Yeah. I'll carpool with you, because I think it's 100%. I plan to be there multiple times, but anybody who lives in the South Bay and is close to there, like, first, it's just a really fun place to go to a game and really good food. Go to Turkey Mike's Barbecue. You won't be disappointed. Just go have some barbecue, watch these kids who are 19, 20 years old. And the cool thing is, when you walk into the stadium there, you look up and they have all these banners of like Buster Posey when he played there, Joe Panic when he played there, Belt, Crawford. So you realize, like, everybody has come through there, and people who have been going there religiously to games for a long time have seen all these guys who ended up being parts of the three title teams when they were 20, 21, 22 years old, which is really cool. And it's also a great place. You can't do this now, I don't think, but hopefully later in the season, like, a great place to actually get a chance to get an autograph or like talk to a player. And maybe next year is more realistic, but you know, these kids haven't ever been in that environment before, so they're excited to do it. And then you woke up one day and maybe it's Buster Posey. So I highly recommend for people to go down to San Jose and see that team this year.
Alex eats San Jose. Book it. Let's do this.
Yeah, that's on my schedule. So we will do it.
Solid. Elsewhere in the minor leagues, Ramos starts in Double A. And then Hunter Bishop, who I'm a big fan of, Wilson and Homer Bailey will be in High A Eugene. So we've got guys moving around. And, you know, I thought by this point in the season, we'd be talking more about seeing some of these kids soon, you know, maybe not in June, but July. But with how the Giants are playing, you know, it's all out the window. We don't need to be hot swapping dudes in right now.
Yeah. I wrote the other day that everybody is wondering why Ramos isn't in AAA, but it's actually not true, because everybody's wondering why he's not on the big league roster. So he is, but he's only played 25 games in Double A. He struggled there in 2000, not struggled, but he was closer to average there in 2019. So they want to see him repeat that. As you kind of go through that, it got something in my head. Like, I've always followed all these individual teams, but I don't know that I've ever been in a situation where I've wanted to see the box score from four Giants minor league affiliates every night or the next morning. Like, it would be, you know, you would check out Joey Bart was doing or how Ramos was doing, or in years past you would look at a BD or when Williamson was in A-ball, things like that. But I really think this year, I mean, Bart's going to be at AAA, and there's some other guys there that we're going to be interested in. That Double A rotation is really interesting. Sean Jelly, Tristan Beck, Sam Long, Matt Frisby, a lot of guys who have a shot to be in the big league rotation. So basically on a daily basis, you want to check the box score there. And then I talked about San Jose and then Eugene, which is their new affiliate, their High A affiliate. Bishop, Bailey, and Wilson. Those are three guys we've talked about a lot over the last year. Those are three first round picks. And I think they have a chance to move quickly to Double A. So it's really, really the most interesting by far that I've seen the Giants farm system since I've been doing this, which is, you know, a decade now.
The Farhan effect. That is a verifiable scientific phenomenon.
It is a little credit, though, to the people who were there before, because Luciano was signed under Evans. A lot of these international guys were signed under Bobby Evans, and he did draft Ramos and Joey Bart. So just want to give a little bit of credit to everybody who was part of that previous regime, because you know, I think at the time people thought they left the cupboard. I can't talk today. Completely bare, but they didn't. They left some pretty good players there. So, but yes.
Real quick, before we move on from minor leagues, Alex, what is the strongest minor league team name? The Flying Squirrels, the River Cats, or the Emeralds?
I think Flying Squirrels. And the logo, too, is a flying squirrel.
100% agree.
Yeah. That's up there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a top tier minor league team name. As we move away from talking Giants baseball, we're talking minor leagues. Let's talk a little NL West. Imagine a few years ago telling yourself that the NL West would be considered the best division in baseball. How crazy is what we're seeing out here right now?
I think I maybe could have believed that at the time, because we've all been talking about San Diego for like 5 years. We've just been waiting for them to arrive. And Los Angeles has been doing this.
It was AL West. Yeah. All anyone wanted to talk about.
But Los Angeles has been doing this forever now. And, you know, we at some point knew the Giants were going to rise up. I thought it would be next year, but we at some point knew they would be part of this. I did not, you know, I couldn't have pictured the four-team race they have going on right now. I'll say that. Like, it's okay. And people are not talking enough about the Diamondbacks, who are just hanging out there, two games back of first place. They are – let me look it up. They are 15-13, and they are pitching better, and Madison Bumgarner's pitching better. So they're going to be a part of this too. So it is right now a four-team race.
I mean, one team in that race has a no-hitter, and it's not the Diamondbacks, though.
That's – well, I disagreed with that, but yes, I see your point, yes. He was not very good on Sunday. But, yeah, it is a really interesting race, I think, in – and I think part of it, too, is that the Dodgers and Padres, when they play each other, like, it's what we expected. And then the rest of the time, they just kind of haven't been what we expected yet. So
let's dip into that for a little bit, because the Dodgers are definitely not what everyone expected lately. They lost 3-4 to the Brewers in some fantastically strange games. Extra innings, blowing large leads. Obviously they weren't doing too hot against the Padres. What's going on in LA right now?
Well, first of all, a lot of injuries. And, you know, I think Giants fans, I had a lot of people in my mentions the last couple of days going like, why does this always happen to us? Why does every Giants player get hurt? And I just wanted to be like, well, look at the Dodgers roster. Like, Bellinger's been down. Betts missed some time. Lux was on the IL. They've had other guys go in and out. They've, in the last week, I think, lost David Price. Dustin May had like a piercing pain go through his elbow, which doesn't sound good at all. And for a guy who throws 100, like, that's always ominous. So they've lost some people in their bullpen. Gratterall went on the IL. Knebel went on the IL. Gonsolin, who was really good for them last year, has been hurt. So I don't even know. That's just off the top of my head. But anyway, they've had a lot of guys injured, and that has impacted them a lot. And I think they've had a lot of pitching hurt, which has impacted them. And that's kind of the one area on the other side. The Giants have been pretty lucky from a pitching standpoint. Cueto's been out. But haven't really missed too much time from that group, especially in the rotation. And that makes an impact. And the other thing, I just think it's really hard when you have been – the team that wins the division every year and the team that goes to the World Series every year to get up in April. And I think we heard some of that, and Mookie Betts kind of called him out the other day and was like, we have to play better baseball. I think it's got to be hard for them to like get up for these series, and that's not an excuse, like, you should, but it must be weird for them to kind of, you know, look around and see people panicking in April and May and being like, hey, you guys lost 3 in a row. What's going on? And they're like, well, everybody does this. So, yeah, those are the two things that have stood out to me about them.
Believe me, Giants fans know better than anyone about winning the World Series 1 year and then not coming out too hot the year after.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think they probably, like, we've had a ton of fun talking about the first place Giants, and I've had a ton of fun tweeting out screen grabs of the standings and things like that, and I know a lot of Giants Twitter has done the same. I doubt anybody in the Dodgers clubhouse is looking at it and going like, oh my God, we're in second place. Like, so, and to credit the Giants, like, they're not really getting caught up in that either. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Gabe Kapler says repeatedly, like, guys, it's April 27th. Guys, it's April 30th. Guys, it's May 2nd. Like, so they're not getting caught up. They know it's a long season, but it is fun right now, the first week of May, to look at the standings.
Since we're talking about the Dodgers, I want to put this out there because are you a video game guy at all, Alex?
I was during the pandemic, and that's about it.
I've been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and Cody Bellinger is in it. It's the weirdest thing ever.
Like he's a character?
I don't know if anyone listening is a gamer, but I was playing this video game, and you know, it's about Vikings. They're all talking in old English voices. And then all of a sudden, here comes Cody Bellinger with his like LA accent in the game. And it was one of the most immersion-breaking, funny things I think I've experienced in a video game. But good for Cody there to be spreading his talents around to video games.
So what I know about gamers is that a lot of them take it really seriously. So was it cool, or was it like, hey, Cody, you just ruined my quest? Is it quest? I don't know.
I think quest plays there. Quest works. I would imagine there was some negative backlash to this because the man can hit a baseball, but he can't. He's not a great voice actor. Put it that way.
Yeah, I would. I can't say anything. Like, I can never be a voice actor. But I just, from what I've seen of Cody and the screen grabs of Cody sitting on the dugout rail, like staring off into space, I can't imagine he's like dynamic in a video game.
Yeah. It made me kind of think like what Giants player I would want to see cameo in a unexpected part of my life. But I guess we got Hunter Pence on Full House and Bill Nye and all that a few years ago. So we are probably all cameoed out.
Well, the answer is the same as it always is, right? Like, you would love to just randomly be playing a video game and Tim Lincecum shows up because he was a huge 100%. Fan of the game and nobody knew. And he met like the developer and ended up in the next version, which is completely plausible.
I am in. I cannot wait to see Tim Lincecum show up in like Diablo 4 or something like that. Game on.
Okay, you keep an eye on that stuff for me. We'll find out if that ever happens. In the meantime, Giants are going to Denver. Underrated city, good breakfast city, good salad city. A lot of other stuff there as well. But we will watch those games, and we will be back on Thursday with Dwayne Kuiper, who was once a broadcaster for the Rockies, right?
That's right. Oh, we got to ask some Rockies broadcasting questions, have him break down that story next week. Great call.
He probably has some good Denver rain delay stories too. So we will be back. A reminder to people, if you like us or just tolerate us and can subscribe, that's always helpful for us, or leave a review.
But if you don't like us, you don't have to leave a review. It's all good.
Yeah, but you can still subscribe. So do that, and we will see everybody on Thursday.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.